You know, 10 months ago, we made a decision to redefine our direction. We knew there would be ups and downs this season. We knew that we would encounter some things that were going to be difficult, and we did. With that said, I think we're in a better place today than we were at this time last year. And I think we have an opportunity to grow as an organization starting today.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
Levine, he goes right. Oh!
Stop it, Sampson! Did you not get the memo?
Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA.
Here's Enes Kanter, what are you doing? The finisher in New York City.
Your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
We're going to preach patience. Doesn't mean we're not going to be looking for ways to get better, but a lot of it's going to come internally. We need Zach LaVine to be a better basketball player. Chris Dunn to come back a better player. Lauri Markkanen, Bobby Portis, you go down the line. They have to put in the time, and confident that they will.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day.
Like I said at the beginning, I feel better today about our direction and our position than I did a year ago.
Locked On Bulls. Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, writer of Bulls basketball in the NBA at LockedOnBulls.com and College Hoops over at SB Nation. Along with me is Matt Peck, host of Bulls Outsiders on NBC Sports Chicago and host of the 312 show on AM 1590 WCGO. Follow us on social media on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show, iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Our text and voicemail lines at 331-979-1369. Drop us your text, your voicemails. We'll do a mailbag episode tomorrow. We do it every single Wednesday, so make sure you get your text messages, your voicemails in at 331-979-1369. Matt, welcome back from yesterday. Yesterday's episode ended in a very strange and roller coaster of emotion fashion. We got a trade in with the Rockets for Michael Carter-Williams, in which it took several minutes for us to find out that the Bulls were actually waiving Michael Carter-Williams and that they were not dealing a second-round pick that really meant anything. So first, want to kick off the show by saying it was a good deal by the Bulls. If they want to put a little cash in their pocket, who cares? Hopefully the favor is better than the cash they got right now. But yeah, they got over $1 million for Michael Carter-Williams and immediately waived him. So thank the Lord for that. But how you doing?
What's up, Jordan? What's up, Bulls Nation? Yeah, there was certainly a little bit of panic at the end of our episode. As we were rolling, the Woj bombs kept coming. And it went from panic to relief in the matter of a few minutes. But, I mean, we were sitting there saying, like, there's no way the Bulls actually are valuing Michael Carter-Williams. There's something else going on here. And so after a moment of panic, we got the full story, and more details have rolled in as recently as this morning. Here's a quick breakdown for you. And if you don't follow Albert Namad on Twitter, I recommend you do so, because he's great with NBA cap stuff. So the Bulls, by acquiring Michael Carter-Williams from the Rockets and then immediately waiving him, capitalize on his 1.2 partial guarantee, net a $700,000 profit, $1.1 million cash received, minus the $366,000 remaining salary obligations to Carter-Williams. For, as Albert puts it, what amounts to about an hour or so of work. So the Bulls made, netted $700,000 for an hour of clerical work, helping the Rockets shed a little bit of their tax, of their salary tax. So this is a fine move by the Bulls, of course, immediately waiving Michael Carter-Williams and not planning on keeping him for a second stint. And I think the immediate reaction from Bulls fans is just like, it was naturally panic, because we've seen Michael Carter-Williams in a Bulls jersey before, and we know what bringing him here did the last time and everything that went into that. So I think some cynicism was justified until we got the full story. And aside from the money part, which we could talk about a little bit further, The other thing that this does, in addition to waiving Marshawn Brooks in order to open up the spot to then acquire and waive Michael Carter-Williams, means the Bulls now have an open roster spot if they want to make another subsequent deal before that February 7th trade deadline. They now have some wiggle room with their roster in case they need to make a trade or want to make a trade where they're sending away one player and bringing back two, something like that.
Yeah, I know a lot of people chirping over the last 24 hours asking maybe should the Bulls pick up Patrick McCaw. There's a lot of guys available like on that you can pick up on 10-day contracts if the Bulls want to fill that roster spot, but we'll see. They'll probably keep it open till the trade deadline is over, right? Unless, I mean, if you do sign a guy to a 10-day contract, it's just 10 days. So even if you are going to make a deal, you can still open that spot after those 10 days. But I would assume if the Bulls are going to make a deal, keeping that spot open, more likely than not, is going to be a real possibility until the trade deadline, February 7th this year. So, yeah, I mean, they paid Marshawn Brooks, which is good. They used the money, the $1 million that they got from the Michael Carter-Williams deal. They paid off what they needed to pay off for Michael Carter-Williams, used the rest of what they could to pay off Marshawn Brooks. So you're looking really at, for acquiring 2 second-round picks, you took a hit of about $200K, which isn't really that bad. Think about it. So I'm good with it. I'm good with it. I was just overwhelmed, and that's a little sneak peek. Like, we never get a chance to break news while we're recording. We record at such weird times, and it seems like we always just catch the news immediately right after we record. Like, that's just the way Locked On Bulls has been for over a year now since we started here. So that's the roller coaster emotions we rode yesterday for a few minutes. And like a lot of Bulls fans too said, like, was thinking the same thing. And look, Woj did not put those tweets in a way, in a phrasing that would keep Bulls fans calm and collected and cool. He was right, looking for a little bit of reaction there.
Because the first tweet was, the Bulls are acquiring Michael Carter-Williams and cash from Houston. And then the next tweet was about how the Bulls were sending a conditional pick to Houston. And then a third tweet said, the Bulls are going to waive Michael Carter-Williams. So it was fair immediately to say, wait, what the heck's going on? And then, because of this team's track record and this front office's track record with second round picks, and knowing that we had just gotten a couple from Memphis in the holiday trade, to turn around and say, oh my gosh, wait, we're just gonna like send one of these picks right back out for a guy that we all laughed at while he was here, of course it triggered Bulls fans because of, as you said, the way that Woj's tweets came out. And we have, of course, since learned that the conditions on that second round pick, it's essentially so heavily protected, top 55 protected, that the pick will never convey. It was just a mandatory part of that trade to allow that trade to take place. Because unless the Bulls suddenly are a top 5 NBA team in 2020, they're not giving that pick over to Houston. It just was a necessary part of that trade. So The Bulls didn't lose anything in this. They just, you know, they waived Marshawn Brooks. They then acquired and waived Michael Carter-Williams and netted themselves close to a cool million in cash considerations. Shout out to our cash considerations Bulls podcast fam, who I'm sure are having a field day with this one. It's, you know, in what we have come to know about the Bulls front office, it is a move that makes plenty of sense. Because if there's one thing they do well, it's little moves like this that, you know, put a little bit more money in their pocket.
Yeah, and for the people on Twitter, too, like the small, very small part of the fan base that, like, is still ride or die with Gar and Pax and hate the opposite side of everybody that's on fire Gar Pax. And, like, coming after us, like, dude, we've said it a million times. We've been fair. Like, did you not listen to our Friday episode where we spent the first 20 minutes praising the fact that they got 2 second-round picks for Justin Holiday? Like, I'm tired of doing the back and forth with them. But for them, like, why do you care that the Bulls picked up 70 to 200K? Like, that's not getting reinvested back into the team. That's going back in Reinsdorf's pocket. So for those people, I was just like, why do you care so badly?
Dude, all of the jokes from Chicago sports fans about how Jerry was going to turn around and use that money to get Machado or Harper, like, clearly this is peanuts money compared to some of those mega, you know, several hundreds of millions of dollars worth of money that some team is going to end up throwing at those two guys to play baseball. I mean, like, it was just, like, so ripe for the picking to say, oh, well, there's another $700K that Reinsdorf can take away from his basketball team, turn around and throw at his baseball team. Like, they walked right into that one.
Yeah, there's that weird rumor, too, that apparently Jerry Reinsdorf and Manny Machado were supposedly seen in a suite at the Bears game, and then other people said that that wasn't true. So I don't know. There's rumors flying everywhere. The Sox are signing John Jay, one of Machado's best friends. Like, the total focus of Reinsdorf right now is on the White Sox and the White Sox alone. So with that, though, good deal. Overall, fine. Put money in your pocket. Cool. Not a big deal. Michael Carter Williams is not going to be a Bull. Great. You didn't have to give up a second round pick. Great. I'm cool with it. The thing is, though, it doesn't change the Bulls' likely outcome of how much money that they're going to have in free agency next year or even the year after. It's marginal. But, Matt, I don't think we've mentioned much of what free agencies look like. We've kind of liked to focus on what's gone on here the first few months of the season. But now that we're at the start of the new year, maybe this is something to start to look at. And while we don't have a game till tomorrow, I felt like this was a good opportunity to do so. So, shout out to a lot of people on Bulls Twitter who do these Bulls cap sheets. And I know Kevin Anderson from NBC Sports Chicago does one. Also, the Bulls GM, Ryan Bora, he does another one too. I'm looking at his right now. So he adjusted everything yesterday for this trade. And basically what it comes down to is the Bulls likely cap space for 2019 free agency is going to be $39.5 million. Now the question is how do you spend that $39.5 million? And there's a couple questions. Like, you got Bobby Portis that you have a question about. You've got to ask some questions about Chris Dunn, whether you're going to sign him to an extension. So if you go ahead with both of those deals, you're looking at maybe $20 million, probably less than that if you're going to re-sign both Bobby and Chris Dunn in the offseason.
Well, and they don't need to re-sign Chris Dunn yet. They could just...
Yeah, they don't need to.
They could just keep him for a final year of his rookie deal, team option, and then, you know, delay that decision for another year. And maybe they want to because they want to watch Chris Dunn develop for another year. Even though, you know, he's a guy who's already, you know, reached sort of the mid-20s part of his prime. They, you know, because of all of the injuries to Dunn, some of them being fluke injuries, they haven't really had a chance to see him develop and evaluate him over a long stretch of games. And hopefully we get that for the last 40 games of this season. But that's a decision that they can delay for a year. Bobby is a decision they have to make right now. And I'm curious to see, honestly, I think Bobby's injury, or both injuries, unfortunate as it might be, because we were talking about Bobby having, and maybe if the Bulls were a better team, a sixth man of the year kind of season, knowing that he was going to come off the bench and embracing that role with Markkanen and Wendell in the starting lineup. So we heard that Bobby turned down an offer from the Bulls this summer that was somewhere around 4 years and 50-some million. So, like, that given what we knew about Bobby the player, that was a pretty good offer. And from what I've heard from people, a lot of people were talking in Bobby's ear saying, hey, man, this is a pretty good deal. You should take it. It's tough to turn down that kind of guaranteed money in the NBA when so much about the future is unpredictable. Bobby chose to bet on himself based on what, from what I know, was a difference of about $8 million on the table when it was all said and done, as far as what he wanted over a four-year contract and what the Bulls were offering. $8 million. So it might end up being a good thing for the Bulls that Bobby's season was interrupted by these injuries, because if Bobby did come in and just have a lights-out season, being a great scorer off the bench and increasing his value compared to what it was at the end of last season, the Bulls might have had a harder time keeping it because he might be getting all sorts of interest and offers around the league. Unless Bobby just plays lights out for the back half of this season, I don't see that happening, and the Bulls might actually have a decent shot to keep him.
Yeah, I think so, too, and some of the good faith stuff. And you hope that, like, giving, as silly as the leadership committee is, like, laughing to talk about it every time we bring it up, giving him some of the voice and some of the role on this team maybe shows a little bit of commitment on the Bulls side. And I think, too, offering him 4 years at 50-some-odd million dollars this summer shows some type of commitment in Portis, too. So maybe some good faith this summer if Bobby can stay healthy for the rest of the season. Maybe they do find a deal done, but I don't think it's going to be anywhere near 4 years, 50 some million dollars. I think Bobby kind of lost out on that with two injuries now, and we'll see how he plays, but 45 game sample size is hard to do when you've stacked up two injuries, one being to your knee and the other being to your ankle.
Yeah. And that's why if Bobby plays decently enough that the Bulls want to keep him and he still is firm in his desire to stay with the Bulls, maybe they can go back to that negotiating table and find some common ground this time around. But to your original point about what kind of money the Bulls will be working with you know, Rolo's money coming off the books, with Jabari's not getting his team option picked up, they will have some money. And you and I have been saying this pretty much all season long. It seems very unlikely that the Bulls will be able to draw interest from any real big-name free agents in the upcoming summer offseason because they're not there yet competitively. And players want to play four teams that are, you know, first and most importantly, it's either winning or money for all of these NBA players, and ideally a combination of both. The Bulls can offer money, but they can't offer winning right now. So that's kind of why we saw the result of this past offseason, where they spent $20 million on Jabari because they had plenty of money to spend, and that was really the only quasi-interesting free agent player, big-name player, that they could get. And that's a lot of people saying, well, you know, don't be too hard on the Bulls front office for paying Jabari $20 million. Where else were you going to spend that money? There's probably going to be a very similar situation coming up this summer where the Bulls will have money to spend. They may or may not spend some of it on keeping Bobby Portis, but outside of that, they'll still have money to spend, but where do you spend it? Because nobody's coming here this summer.
Can I ask you a question? So with, you know, Bulls fans are kind of, I feel like there's this, the way that Bulls fans are approaching free agency over the next two seasons. And I think it all falls back on this pipe dream of Anthony Davis. It's like a lot of fans feel like, okay, if we're not going to get any of the guys that are coming up in 2019, it's okay. Maybe we can trade for Anthony Davis, or maybe if he doesn't decide to stay in New Orleans, that we can sign him in free agency. I think the number one way to get him is to trade him. But even so, taking a more cautious approach over the next 2 years to free agency, because we can sit back on the pipe dream of Davis. Say Davis gets traded this summer, or even before this summer, and he goes to somewhere like the Lakers or wherever, Boston, and he re-signs that max contract, and that pipe dream's gone. What do you want the Bulls to do with that money, 2019 or 2020? What would be ideal? Would you want them to spend a bulk of that money and bring in some guys that are 26 to 28, put them on 3 or 4 year deals? Or are you saying, let's sign some fringe guys for 1 year contracts, play one more year out, and then really unload in 2020?
Well, I think, obviously, Bulls fans are keeping an eye on Anthony Davis, you know, kid who played his high school basketball here in Chicago, because people are already, for the most part, looking past 2019. As you and I have said, it's not like anyone in their right mind as a Bulls fan thinks we have any legitimate shot at getting Kawhi or KD or Clay or, you know, heck, our old pal Jimmy Butler. Like, none of the big...
Can I say one thing really quick?
Yeah.
I think that the Bulls, even though we don't think Kevin Durant has any shot of coming to Chicago, I don't think that there is any reason the Bulls shouldn't at least pick up the phone and call and try to get a meeting with him, even if it's a pipe dream. I just, at this point in 2019, you've got the money. Try to get a meeting. And if he says, hell no, I don't want to play in Chicago, then so be it. But do you agree with me at least in that sense? It's like, don't even just say, we're not even going to try. At least try, like 2010, at least try, right? You have
sure.
The money, at least try.
Sure. They should reach out and see if they can even get a meeting. I would say that odds are less than 5% that Durant would even take a meeting with the Bulls, honestly.
That's bad.
He's entering the back half of his prime, man. And he may be fed up and ready to leave from his little Warriors stint. You know, if the Warriors keep things together and Durant gets himself another ring and says he's ready to move on from the Warriors drama and, you know, he's sick of Draymond and whatever other reasons, and he wants to go prove that he can win somewhere else. If he wants to prove he can win somewhere else, Chicago is not and should not be anywhere near the top of his list, because that's a very hard job to prove that he can be the best guy on a championship caliber team, as opposed to...
But isn't that what he wants to be?
Well, I mean, I don't know. Kevin Durant is such a weird... You know, he's mystery wrapped in enigma, man. He's a hard dude to figure out, but he certainly seems to be like a guy who is very concerned with what people think of him, based on his social media activities.
No, I don't know how well he would
and,
do here.
You know,
in
his
Chicago.
Burners from last year and all that stuff. Like, I just think if Durant really wants to prove he can win outside of the Warriors dynasty, the Bulls are nowhere near the top of that list because it would be very hard for Durant to lead this team to championship relevance. Do you agree?
I think if you... What teams are we talking about? I guess I have to list out five teams that he'd be interested in going to this summer, right? Either re-signing back with the Warriors, going to the Knicks. Where else?
Going to the Knicks or the Nets.
To the
because
Nets.
Because it's New York.
New York, Brooklyn.
Going to Washington, which everybody always talks about because that's you know
fire,
where
man.
KD is from, but he has never really expressed interest in quote unquote going home to play for the Wizards, which by the way might be even more of a dumpster fire organization than our Bulls right now.
And I have no idea how they're going to clear up the money to be able to sign him.
Oh my God! Well, like they got to do something between Otto Porter's contract and John Wall's contract. Like, they're probably an even longer shot to get KD than the Bulls are at this point. So, I mean, to your original question, like, yes, fine. You can, if you're the Bulls, pick up the phone and try and get a hold of KD's agent. Fine. Cool. Do that. Yes. I don't think it's necessarily like we should really scorn the Bulls front office if they don't do that because living in a realistic world, they know that their odds of getting him are slim to none.
Totally agree.
I would much rather they put their energy and focus into trying to figure out a way to acquire Anthony Davis sometime between now and when he becomes a free agent in 2020. To me, there is more time to make your organization look respectable. There is more time to show that you have a promising young core of talent that's budding and ready to take a step forward and get a guy in Anthony Davis who is younger than Kevin Durant. Very interesting, exciting prospect, would clearly make this team more relevant than it is right now. And I agree with you too, Jordan. Kevin Durant is a pipe dream. Anthony Davis, probably also a pipe dream, but one that the Bulls have a little bit more time to work towards. And I think instead of trying to convince AD to come here as a free agent, when guess what? His agent is LeBron's agent, and everybody's talking about him going to play in LA, get him in a trade. Get him in a trade and then convince him to stay.
I just wanted to play devil's advocate on Kevin Durant because, I mean, it is weird to think that, like, after all the shit that's happened and, like, the running joke that the Bulls are across the league, and, like, players talk too, but still, I sit here and try to play devil's advocate and I can make a pretty good argument of why, like, the Bulls may even just get a meeting. Like, not saying that he would sign here or anything, but stack him up against the other teams that would be going after him this season outside of the Warriors. I feel like if he really truly wants to build things on his own, then he's going to leave the Warriors, and then that leaves maybe 3, 4, 5 teams to be able to sign him. Like, I still think the Knicks are the favorite, but if you want to go to a place that already has some pretty solid talent around, you want to go to a big market, like, it's kind of hard to deny Chicago, but I can understand the baggage that comes with coming to Chicago too. So I get it, but there is at least a little bit of an argument to be made. And hey, if it turns out to be May 14th, May 15th, and that ping pong ball ends up in your favor and you're number one, you're talking about Lauri Markkanen, Wendell Carter Jr., Zach LaVine, Chris Dunn, and potentially adding Zion Williamson. Like, it's hard to look away from that. If you're Kevin Durant, as opposed to looking at the Knicks and saying, Kristaps Porzingis, you don't really know what he is. Kevin Knox looks like a huge project. They don't really know what they're doing there. So it's kind of a toss-up. But, like, that's all I would say is there at least is a small argument to be made this summer. And I still don't think it's going to happen, but there is an argument to be made for KD.
I think you're wrong in that it's a non-zero likelihood. And it's certainly there's enough to say, there's enough substance there with the Bulls core and Chicago being a big market, and a big NBA city to say we have enough to at least try to make a pitch to Durant and his people. That is a totally fair evaluation of the situation. I'm just saying, based on the track record that this Bulls team has when it comes to landing big name free agents, not just notable free agents, but top tier free agents in the last 10 to 15 years. And the fact that I still think that this young core is at least a couple ways years away from realistically contending puts them pretty far down on Durant's list, if they're on his list at all.
Fair. Definitely fair. Okay, so wait, let's go back to this Anthony Davis conversation really quick. All right. Say for fun, Bulls are in the conversation. The Pelicans are interested going up against the Lakers. What are you willing to put on the table? I guess I should ask, what are you not willing to put on the table for Anthony Davis?
To me?
Let's start there.
If I'm running this Bulls team.
Yes.
And we have the chance to get Anthony Correct. Davis in a trade. Nothing and no one is untouchable.
Yes.
Anthony Davis is still only 25 years old. He has a lot, you know, knock on wood, of top tier MVP caliber, or certainly MVP candidate caliber basketball ahead of him. And I like a lot of the young pieces on this Bulls team right now. I'm trying to get myself excited about the future with a core that includes Markkanen and Wendell and maybe Chris Dunn and maybe Zach LaVine. But none of them are untouchable if we're talking Anthony Davis. That's my opinion.
I agree with you. I think none of the Bulls players on this team currently are untouchable. I also agree that their pick right now, obviously not untouchable. Where I start to start thinking about packaging up a deal is, I think there's only two assets in tier one that the Bulls have right now that I would say you can't package both of those for Anthony Davis. And that would be if the Bulls land the number one overall pick. You can't package the number one overall pick with Lauri Markkanen. I just don't think you can do that. If you do that, you're probably going to add more to that package too. So you're basically asking to take three core pieces away from your team and essentially turn it around and do kind of what the Pelicans are doing, right? Like I get that bringing Anthony Davis here, you'd be able to scrounge and maybe keep Chris Dunn or maybe keep Carter. You maybe keep LaVine around. But still, it's kind of a quasi what the Pelicans would be doing. So I guess that's where I would be stuck, is like first number one overall pick plus Lauri Markkanen, probably plus more for Anthony Davis. Are you still doing the deal?
Well, okay, but the other thing that you need to think about is right now, and again, we're assuming that the Bulls get some luck and get the number one overall pick. And we're talking about packaging
Correct. Best
the number
scenario.
One pick and Markkanen for Anthony Davis. Let's remind ourselves that it's very unlikely that the Pelicans do anything this season, because Davis doesn't have, they don't have to make a decision about AD until this time next year. Leading up to the 2019-2020 trade deadline, on the cusp of him reaching free agency in 2020. So right now, it is assuming the Bulls net the number one pick, and right now, let's make the assumption that it is Zion Williamson, and the Bulls go with that, with the number one pick, which I think at this point is hands down the right call. Then you're not talking about the allure of number one overall pick and what that might be. You're talking about packaging Zion Williamson halfway through his rookie season and Lauri Markkanen. Now, that becomes a more interesting conversation than just Markkanen and the number one pick, because what does Zion Williamson look like halfway through his rookie season? What does it look like with Zion playing with some combination of Markkanen, Wendell, Dunn, LaVine? Is that is so enticing as if you're the Bulls front office to say, you know, Anthony Davis, we can get him in a trade, but we don't even know if we can convince him to stay once he comes here, and we'd be giving up a lot of young potential talent. So it's not so much Markkanen and the number one pick as far as, you know, what would it take to get Anthony Davis. You got to fast forward a year and remind yourself that that number one pick will already be in human NBA player form and not just an unknown variable of number one pick. And we will have had a chance to see what that number one pick, parentheses Zion Williamson, looks like, you know, through 40 games of an NBA season, and that might change things.
Yeah, and I think, like, just from the articles that you read from Woj and you read from Zach Lowe and from basically any NBA insider out there, they're saying that it sounds like the Pelicans are going to make a decision, or Anthony Davis is going to make a decision before the summer starts. So it makes sense. Like, if Anthony Davis is not going to stay, he doesn't want to screw the Pelicans, which is good on him. Cool. If he does want to stay, then he's going to get a deal done sooner rather than later and then stay and figure it out. But that's, I think, the only opportunity for the Bulls to really get in the conversation. If the Lakers are going to push forward and trade in an unbelievable amount of an overwhelming trade to the Pelicans, and the Pelicans are going to say yes before the season is over, I think that's very unlikely to happen. But if they do that, the Bulls have no shot in the conversation, because I think the Bulls need to be guaranteed that number one pick to really make it enticing for the Pelicans to say, okay, take him, take Markin, and we'll trade you Davis, as opposed to the Lakers. The Lakers probably can put together a better package of young players for the Pelicans going forward than maybe the Bulls can.
I mean, that's debatable. You talk about Lonzo, Brandon Ingram, Kuzma. You know, that's probably the
Josh Hart.
Okay, interesting young core of pieces there. I don't necessarily think that group of young talent is above and beyond what the Bulls' core of young talent is right now. I really don't. I know probably nationally people would say that the Lakers' young core is more impressive. But I mean, you know, people were talking about, like, the Lakers don't need LeBron and their young core is, like, good enough to be competing. Look what they did in the stretch of games without LeBron. Like, they're not all that great. Yeah, they're in a very difficult Western Conference. But as far as, like, comparing what the Bulls could offer versus what the Lakers could offer, because, of course, that is the number one team that people keep talking about because of the Rich Paul factor and the fact that now Anthony Davis and LeBron have the same representation. That, more than anything to me, I think, is the roadblock that will get in the way of the Bulls. That there's only so much that they can do and say to convince Anthony Davis and Rich Paul to turn their eyes towards Chicago, when it just seems like such an automatic happy marriage that you know, Anthony Davis and LeBron can play together, and the Pelicans might see enough of a package as far as the guys that we were just talking about, Lonzo, Kuzma, you know, Josh Hart, Ingram, to say, all right, knowing that we would lose Anthony Davis for nothing because he's told us that he's not going to resign with us, then we'll take whatever best package comes to us from the Lakers, and then we'll just be done with it. I can see that happening. And I think because of the agency connection, it's certainly much more likely for the Lakers to get Anthony Davis than us. It's a pipe dream. I think it's a little less of a pipe dream than Durant because, as I said, we've got some time to work on it. But if it is something that the Pelicans want to get this figured out sooner rather than later, I think it's... it makes it even harder for the Bulls to pull something off, because right now a lot of people are still wondering just how good this Bulls core might be, and the Pelicans might not be as interested in a trade with the Bulls as they would be with the Lakers.
I mean, and who wouldn't want to play with LeBron James? And right, it's like, that's the conversation we were having this summer, is like, oh, well, all of a sudden, Kawhi, really not that interested. Paul George, really not that interested. Like, all of these guys are like, I kind of want to pave my own path here and kind of want to go up against you, as opposed to having to either be the scapegoat when we lose or not get any of the credit when we win, right? Anthony Davis has been, like, really the only guy that's been, like, it, without actually saying it, like, yeah, LeBron would be awesome to play with. And it's, like, the connection of him and his agency make total sense. And, yeah, if he says he wants to go and win now, like, Chicago's not the place to go and win now. I hate to say it. And the other thing, too, that I've been thinking about, Matt, is, like, Anthony Davis could be like, yeah, I want to go play with LeBron and go with the Lakers, because guess what? I'm only, what, 24, 25 years old? I still have a shitload of my career left. LeBron could retire in 4 years, and I'm 29 years old. I could come to the Bulls then. I could come to the Bulls when I'm in my 30s. Like, that's a real possibility. So playing at home could happen at any stage of his career. And I think he probably realizes that, too. As much as he loves Chicago, he probably, you know, that's the debate. Do you love winning more? Do you want to win for your hometown? Are you willing to go through another rebuild, kind of the way the Pelicans were going? Seems like he's not about that. Matt, last 5 minutes. Plan B, real quick. So if let's just say, for the fact that Anthony Davis is off the table and you've got all this money to spend, and now Anthony Davis has been traded to the Lakers. Let's just say that. Got all this money to spend. Where are you spending it? Who are you spending it on? Are you waiting 2019? Are you going to spend a little bit in 2019? Are you going to go after some of these guys? Are you going to take a chance on a guy like, if Boston decides not to re-sign Kyrie Irving, are you going to take a chance on Kyrie Irving and try to get a meeting with him? Are you going to see if Kemba Walker is going to be willing to leave Charlotte? Or do you say, you know what, pick up some veterans on one-year deals. Maybe we can take a chance on a young guy, still keep our flexibility for 2020 and really go after it then.
Man, I mean, you say Kyrie Irving, as much of a head case as that guy is, which makes me a little hesitant.
He hasn't been the same since his injury either.
Yeah.
I hate to say
it. Yeah. You know, he's, when he is healthy and on his game, he's one of the most dominant offensive players in the league. He really is. And I might even, if, you know, I might be willing to take a chance on him if he were interested. And you know, that one is just, again, in the same line as, you know, Durant and Clay and all the Kawhi, like, pretty unlikely. But as far as what, you know, what plan B is, assuming the Bulls don't get meetings with any big name free agents this upcoming summer, I mean, spend wisely on mid-tier guys. Look for a competent wing. Look for a point guard who could either rival Chris Dunn for the starting job moving forward, or at least be a competent veteran backup, so that we don't have to deal with this merry-go-round of Archie Diacono or Shaq Harrison or this guy or that guy. You know, the campaign experiment is, you know, mercifully finally over. Like, we don't know if Chris Dunn can be the guy at that spot yet, but we do know that it is vital to your modern NBA team to win and compete at the highest levels to have a versatile point guard who can dominate a game. I think we all are in agreement that Chris Dunn can still improve and Chris Dunn can be an average point guard in this league, but we think his ceiling caps out right around there, being an average middle-of-the-pack point guard. So if the Bulls have no solutions for what to spend their money on, for the love of God, don't do something like, oh, well, we're going to, you know, sign this quasi-interesting player who's had some ups and downs, parentheses Jabari, to some big splash contract, but it's short-term, don't worry about it. Like, address the team and see what your team needs after these final 40 games in the back half of this season. Look at what your young core has. Look at where they need to improve. And go out and look at some of the mid-tier guys that you think could help this team become a more competitive team. You know, hashtag leadership committee, whatever the hell you want to call it. Maybe they're veteran role players that are looking to, you know, play meaningful minutes on a young up-and-coming team, and they're not necessarily worried about a huge contract, but they want to make a nice payday, and they want to, you know, play minutes and be a leader on a team. Look for those guys, and especially guys that fit that description who are also wings or point guards, because those are the two things that this team needs right now. A
couple guys that come to mind: Danny Green.
Would love Danny Green.
And Patrick Beverley.
Pat Beverley.
Both of those guys come to mind.
Chicago guy. A lot of people talk about
him. I feel like both. And look, like, Pat Beverley, he isn't going to do a whole lot for you, but he's going to be a dog for you, and he's going to bring energy and spark, and I think he'd bring veteran leadership, and he wouldn't be that expensive. He'd be a cheap reserve guard, play backup role for, behind Chris Dunn, be a good spark. And, dude, he is like the perfect Boylan mold. If Boylan could create a player in a lab, I'm pretty sure it would be Patrick Beverley. Another guy, too, sneaky to think about, and I don't know if the Pacers are going to let him slip out of their hands, but Bojan Bogdanovic, dude is insane. Yeah. Dude has been insane this season, and he is a three-point monster.
Yeah, he's a beast, and he's certainly crushed the Bulls the couple times they've played this season already.
So maybe that's a guy you look into. Like, he would be like middle-of-the-road small forward that you could pick up, and he would be a guy that would be pass-first, help you with the threes, play some defense. So just some names to keep in mind. But I'm glad we had this conversation. This is something we'll continue to go through as the weeks progress, as we get down to the end of the season. I mean, we're not even at the trade deadline marker yet, but definitely something we'll be focused on as the season progresses. But that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. You can follow us on social media on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls underscore Peck. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show, iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Our text and voicemail lines at 331-979-1369. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley. Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. We'll be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com